The following podcast is from the weekly message at Summit Church in Upstate South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord of hosts. My soul longs, yes, faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and flesh sing for joy to the living God. Blessed are those who dwell in your house, ever singing your praise. Blessed are those whose strength is in you and whose heart are the highways to Zion. For a day in your courts is better than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord bestows favor and honor. No good thing does he withhold from those who walk uprightly. O Lord of hosts, blessed is the one who trusts in you. This is the word of the Lord. Praise be to Christ. You know, as a parent, it's an interesting challenge learning the distinctive characteristics of each child. What I mean by that is learning who they are, how they think, what they like, what they dream about, what they long for. Recently, I had my two oldest children describe for me their perfect day. I told them, I want you to envision with me, help me understand if you had all of the power, all of the ability, money was no option, and you could write, you could author your perfect day, describe it for me. Don't be vague. Give me the details and share what that would look like. And it's fascinating listening to them attempt to author their life. In fact, their personalities come they come to life. My middle daughter, as you listen to her describing her perfect day, she wants no one around. She wants to be alone. Now, she's doing lots of things. She's wanting to spend lots of money, but she doesn't want anybody with her. She wants to be alone. Unfortunately, she gets that honest. My oldest son, if you listen to him describe his perfect day, it's all centered around food. From the moment he wakes up to the moment he goes to bed, it is lots of food. It is all of these incredible experiences centered around what am I going to eat? And he also gets that very honest. But you know what they've yet to author into their story? What they've yet to author into their perfect day as we've given them this exercise? They've yet to author adversity. They've yet to author difficulty, fear, loneliness, and pain, suffering. It's not there for them. And my guess is if you and I were to author our perfect day, we wouldn't put it there either. You see, the psalm that I just read, Psalm 84, is situated in less than desirable circumstances. And yet one day, just one singular day for the psalmist in the presence of God is better than 1,000 elsewhere. 1,000 elsewhere isn't just the good days. It isn't just the perfect days. It's also the dark days. It's also the lonely days. It's also the painful days. It's the fearful days. I want to invite you, if you have a copy of God's word, I want to invite you to go to Genesis chapter 50 with me this morning. As Jason has introduced me this morning, my name's Terry Carlton. I'm one of the campus pastors and elders on the team. And I want to thank you for allowing us for just the next few moments to come to you through this forum. And I pray that the word of God is an encouragement to you as we walk through this a portion of this passage in Genesis 50. If we were to sit down with Joseph at 15 years of age, prior to Genesis 37, what do you think he would have said about his life? How would Joseph define his life? What would his goals be? What would his dreams and aspirations be for his life? Well, Genesis 50 reveals at the end of his life what he would say to 15-year-old Joseph. And there's a question here. There's a question that I believe is raised in Joseph's story that gets answered at the end of his life. And I think it's a question that every one of us is asking, or we will ask in some shape or form. And here's the question: can I trust a sovereign God who is working all things for good? Can we trust a sovereign God who's working all things for good? You see, Joseph's life, his story, answers that question. But there's something that we must consider within this question. And here's what I think we need to consider. What is good? What is good? So let's consider that for just a moment this morning out of this particular passage. If you look at the first part of Genesis 50, Joseph and the Egyptians are mourning the death of Jacob. It's a really big deal. And they give him a proper burial, and then Joseph returns back to Egypt to continue his responsibilities. And so therefore, I want to pick up in verse 15 of Genesis 50. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, this is what they said: "It may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to him." So they sent a message to Joseph saying, "Your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin because they did evil to you. And now please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father." Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, "Behold, we are your servants." But Joseph said to them, "Do not fear, for am I in the place of God?" You can see it in their interaction with Joseph. They're afraid. And their fear is going to cause them to lie. Now, here's why they're afraid. They believe that Joseph is going to show his anger and pay them back for all of the wrong that they did. Now, think about it. All of these years have transpired, and they are still living under the bondage of condemnation. And so here's the lie. They tell us in verse 16, they essentially say to Joseph, "Hey, Dad's dying wish was for you to forgive us." Now, we have no record that Jacob ever gave that request to them. And so we can see what they're doing because they're still living under condemnation. They're trying to protect themselves. They're trying to manipulate and control the situation. Therefore, it's leading them to be deceptive. And Joseph's response is staggering. He weeps. Joseph realizes that in all that God has done to bring about restoration, things are still broken. Things are still not as they should be. And then the brothers respond. They take it a step further. "Well, we'll serve you. You can be our master." And Joseph says, "I don't want you as slaves. I want you as family." And he poses this rhetorical question at the end of 19: "Am I God that I can punish you?" In other words, am I your judge? "No," Joseph says, "I'm not God. I cannot pay you for what you deserve, and I'm not even going to try." Joseph acts on his faith by releasing his brothers from judgment. Now, you may be wondering, and I think it's a valid question, how does he forgive them? How does Joseph release his brothers from all of their evil deeds? Well, as we trace the narrative of Joseph's story, here's what we discover about him. It's Joseph's confident trust in God's unwavering providence. And it's his confident trust in God's providence that's tethered to his understanding of good. It is the very thing that compels Joseph to release his brothers from all their sinful deeds. And then we get to verse 20. As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. Joseph says, you, your actions, your responsibility, pay close attention to these words. Your deeds was intended for my harm, and those actions were evil. But Joseph doesn't leave it there. He says, God, his actions, his authority, his sovereign control was intended for my good. Your intent was evil, and that was all you. But God, his intent was good, and his intent far outweighs your power, your intentions, and your evil deeds. And then he tells us something at the end of 20. He says, all of this good was doing something. In other words, it was bringing something about. I want to just briefly acknowledge a tension within this passage. And here's the tension. The tension is God's sovereignty and our responsibility. God's sovereignty and humanity's responsibility. They're real. And not only are they real, they can exist at the same time without diminishing one ounce of God's authority, power, or control over all things. And you go, well, I don't understand that. Well, neither do I. And just because we don't understand it doesn't diminish the credibility of God's authority or his divine providence. I love what former pastor, writer, and theologian Ray Ortland has to say about this. This is what he says. Reality plays out at two levels simultaneously. Human purposes and divine purposes. The two can be opposite, evil and good. But God knows how to get underneath the evil intent of humanity and reverse it, turn it, work it for good. You see, verse 20 is a picture for us, if you will, of a man who's learned something, who's been shaped by a profound perspective. And that profound perspective has altered the way that he looks at what he has endured over the course of his life. Maybe I could say it this way. Good to Joseph is very different than what good means to us. Joseph has learned something. And I think there's two things that I want to briefly point out to you about that good. One of them is in this passage, and then the other is played out over the course of his life. Here's the first thing. The good that God is working all things towards is the complete and total transformation of our hearts. It's the complete and total transformation of our hearts. I want to read just a couple verses out of Psalm 105 that's going to detail a portion of Joseph's life. Listen to these words. When he summoned a famine on the land and broke all supply of bread, he had sent a man ahead of him, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. So it's interesting here. Notice, God brings the famine. That's acknowledged here by the psalmist. God brings the famine. God cuts off the food supply. God then sends Joseph to Egypt. And what's interesting to see these things played out over the course of his life, it's difficult to see what God is doing if we just gloss over the narrative of Genesis. But what the psalmist gives us here is a picture from God's point of view, that God is the one doing these things. Look at verse 18. His feet were hurt with fetters. His neck was put into an iron, to a collar of iron, until what he had said came to pass. The word of the Lord tested him. Now again, they bruised him. That was their doing. But God tested him. One translation says it this way: the Lord proved Joseph to be true. God is testing Joseph's character. And I know this is incredibly hard for us to reconcile. And I think that's okay, because we're not supposed to understand all that God is doing. Terry, are you saying that God made the brothers sin against Joseph? Absolutely not. But did God take the sinful choices of his brothers? Did he take the hardship of his suffering and bring about something good, even the transformation of Joseph's heart? Absolutely. The Lord tested his character. Joseph has a dream in Genesis 37. That dream leads him into a pit, into a palace, then into prison. And it looks as though everything Joseph is doing is propelling him backwards. It's the appearance as though Joseph has been forgotten. But what you and I know on this side of the story, that a dream, that a pit, that a palace, that a prison, is Joseph is actually closer now to the fulfillment of the dream than he's ever been. What's the progression? Joseph is learning how to trust in the God who has all authority, who has all power, who is in control of all things. Joseph is being humbled. His heart is being shaped. And maybe you go, I mean, Joseph, he's a pretty righteous guy. He's faithfully followed the Lord, and this is what it gets him? There's not one single human being who doesn't need to be continually shaped by God to bring us into greater dependency upon him. We need to be humbled, and yet we would never write it into our story. We need to be brought to a place where we can trust him even when we don't understand him. We need to learn how to wait on God's timing. We need to learn how to keep walking by faith when we have every natural reason not to. I spoke with an older gentleman, an older friend this past week who, over the last year and a half, has just walked through great trial, great adversity. So many things the Lord has led him and his family through. And in the midst of the conversation, these were his words to me. He says, Terry, I have learned that even in pain and suffering, I can still grow. That's it. That's what Joseph is telling us. That's Joseph's life proclaiming to us a better word about what it means that God is working all things for good. Here's the second thing. Verse 20 of Genesis 50 points to this specifically. The good that God is working all things towards is his glory being put on display through our lives for the sake of others. Let me read that verse to you one more time. As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. You see, the good for Joseph, it wasn't better circumstances. It wasn't a happy life. It wasn't clear answers to his suffering. It wasn't comfort and several good years of rest and enjoyment in his final days. No, the good that God is bringing about is a good that's far beyond Joseph. It's so that many people could be kept alive. And in keeping many people alive, God is going to bring about salvation and redemption for many sons and daughters. God's heart for the nations is wrapped up in this statement from Joseph in verse 20. What we find here is the family line is going to be kept alive. And it's the good of this story. Not only was Egypt spared, but through this family line is going to come the Messiah. What God is saying, this is what I'm doing. I'm sparing life, not just for Egypt, but for the world. Joseph is declaring something profound, and I want you to hear it this morning. This story, his story, it's not about him. It's about God's glory through him. And the same is true for you and me. I wonder, would you consider this question as we wrap up our time together this morning? Would you consider this question with me? Is it possible that God is doing something far beyond what you can fathom in this present situation, in your present situation, in this season, which is unknown to all of us? Maybe in your present pain, maybe in your present suffering, maybe in your present hardship, is it possible that God is doing something far beyond? And what he's doing is doing two things. One is shaping and transforming your heart into greater dependency upon his goodness, while also accomplishing something good, beneficial, redemptive, and restorative for someone else's sake. Is that possible? Joseph would say yes. This is good. Brothers and sisters, life is not ultimately about us. This is what Joseph's declaring. It's never been about us. It's about his glory in us and being put on display through us. This is the good that God is working all things towards. So Terry, you're telling me that a sovereign God who is good, even when bad things are happening to me, is asking me to trust him? Yes. You're telling me that a sovereign God who will allow me to suffer even through the sinful choices of humanity is not only good, but he's asking me to trust him, walk with him, and find joy in him? Yes. Because here's the thing. The relief in the midst of the tension is not God could remove my pain because he's powerful enough to do so. No. The relief is that God is with us in our pain. The one who has the power to raise Jesus from the dead is with us. The one who has suffered for us on the cross. By the Spirit, he's with us. God is with us. He's sovereign over us. He's sovereign over the pain, over the wrong, over the injustice, over the unknown. And he's working it all for good. So therefore, I can say to you, you can say to me, you can look at your family today and in the days to come. You can say this with great confidence. Yes, we can trust him. We can trust him. I'll leave you with these words, and I trust they'll be a comfort to your heart. It's by the poet William Cooper. He says, "Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. His purposes will ripen fast, unfolding every hour. The bud may have a bitter taste, but sweet will be the flower."
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. For more information about Summit Upstate and other available resources, check out our website at summitupstate.org.